Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is November 24th, 2018, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is On the Edge of Burnout. As you may know, I was invited to give a keynote address on burnout at the Australasia College of Emergency Medicine 2018 annual scientific meeting in Perth, Australia. This turned out to be a very meta event. A few months leading up to the presentation, my dad, Dr. Ken Milne Sr., got seriously ill. While he faced this with his usual grace and dignity, I was living on the edge of burnout. He was admitted to hospital shortly before I was scheduled to leave for Australia. We had a number of discussions, and he insisted that I go and do not cancel the trip. We reviewed my keynote presentation in the hospital, and he gave me the thumbs up. He was very proud and was telling all his treating physicians about his son's honor to be talking at an international medical meeting. I agreed to go to Australia with his blessing, but I promised him I would live stream the presentation to his hospital bed on the SGEM Facebook page. During the talk, I gave him this big shout out and shared my story about being on the edge of burnout. Here is the audio from that keynote presentation.
Sometimes you get the keynote speaker you want. Sometimes you get the keynote speaker you deserve.
Hi. Hopefully you expect and deserve a great keynote speaker. So here I am. I've just unmasked myself. A little nervous as a Canadian coming in here. Maybe that's why I wear a mask so often. So I brought a little liquid courage. So if I'm doing this during my talk, I'm just taking a quick hit of maple syrup. Whew, good. Okay. So, good morning, everyone. I've got a clicker in this hand, and I want to welcome you to this talk about being on the edge of burnout, and I want to thank the organizing committee, and specifically my friend Ian Rogers, for suggesting me as a speaker and coming here. Now, he picked me up at the airport. If you had seen me at the airport after traveling 30 hours from Canada, taking the red eye, having an adenovirus in my eyes when I arrived, you would say, oh yes, he is on the edge of burnout. Right, Ian? I mean, it was pretty dramatic. Anyways, it's fantastic to be here. We've already had a wonderful time. I'm saying we because my wife is here as well. She's got to feed a kangaroo, touch a koala, scratch a wombat's belly, and hold a snake, which I thought was really, really brave of her. So, just a quick note about social media, because I know that you should ask permission before you share things on social media. Please share my talk. You can take pictures of this talk, you can tweet about it, but you don't have to take notes. You don't have to write anything down. I'm gonna put all my slides and all my references up on the website. But if you are tweeting, use the hashtag, the SGEM, or sorry, use my handle, at the SGEM, and use the hashtag ASM18. All right, so we are on the edge, and we are on the edge of life and death in the emergency department. And I was here yesterday and watched Michelle Johnson do an amazing job of presenting and highlighting what we do every day in the emergency department. And since this is being recorded, please clap one more time for Michelle Johnson, because she did a fantastic job. Didn't she? So our patients are also on the edge. They're often the marginalized, the disadvantaged, and they turn to us as their final social safety net in the emergency department. But constantly being on the edge of life and death can lead to burnout. Another thing about being on the edge is we're early adopters. We sometimes jump first, right, before looking. And sometimes that works out really, really well. We've adopted ultrasound, and it's become the stethoscope of the 21st century. We are really, really good at embracing that new technology to help provide better patient care. And we also own the airway and can do procedural sedation. So this early adoption is exciting, but it can also lead to burnout. But sometimes we leap too soon. Sometimes we get it wrong. I'm thinking of therapeutic hypothermia. There was a lot of excitement when it first came out, but it really hasn't panned out that well. We don't want to have them get hyperthermic, but we don't have to be driving down the temperature. And I'm going to disagree with Anna Holgate, and if you want to come to our session on Thursday and find out more about that, the apneic oxygenation thing, yeah, there's no patient-oriented outcome data that I'm aware of. And then the final thing about jumping too soon is systemic thrombolysis for stroke. That's a whole other talk. Please come on Thursday. All right, so overwhelmingly, part of burnout is trying to stay up on the medical literature. There is roughly 3,800 biomedical publications every day. 75 randomized control trials published every day, and 11 systematic reviews. This is a four-day conference. They told me there'd be no math, but I did it anyways. You are going to be more than 15,000 papers behind. I hope you're feeling very anxious about that, and trying to stay up on the literature. But emergency medicine has embraced and been on the edge of medical education. And FOMED, free open access to medical education, is one of those things. And social media has been hugely successful. But it can be hard to sometimes separate the signal to the noise. Haven't you felt like you're drinking from a fire hydrant when you're on the FOMED world and it's like, whoa! That's a lot of information to try to digest. I mean, there's so many blogs and so many podcasts now, it can be really difficult to keep up. And what about the quality of that information that's coming through FOMED? That's always a concern, but it's a tool. And it's a tool like any other tool. It can be used very well, and it can be used very poorly. And don't even try to keep up with all the tweets and the Facebooks and the Instagram posts and stuff like that. It can lead to burnout. Now, I've said the word burnout a number of times already, and I think it's really important that I should define it. And so I'll define it by using the person who coined the term in 1974. So this was coined as a state of fatigue. He was talking about fatigue or frustration, and it was from professional relationships, not from our personal relationships, that they were referring to burnout. And it's where we fail to produce the results we were expecting or to succeed. Now, there's lots of other definitions of burnout, but one of the classic ones, one of the most well-known ones, and one that's used for research purposes, is the Maslach Burnout Inventory, the MBI. And the Maslach Burnout Inventory was first published in 1981 by a woman named Christina Maslach and Susan Jackson. But nobody ever remembers Jackson. It's always the Maslach Burnout Inventory. So they published this back in 1981. And there are three components to the Maslach Burnout Inventory that you go through. And the first component is emotional exhaustion. It's when people are fatigued, they're tired, they get somatic symptoms, they start missing shifts, they have more sick days. Who's not felt emotionally exhausted? Because I don't know if you're working in emergency medicine then. Because I have certainly felt emotionally exhausted after shifts, after a week, or even after a case. The second component of the Maslach Burnout Inventory is depersonalization. And this is when people get really cynical and rude. And you've probably heard these comments from some of your colleagues. And it's a sign of burnout. When they refer to that patient as a gomer, you have to remember the house of God for that one, but get out of my emergency room. Or the frequent flyer, or you can't fix stupid. Yeah, so some people have heard that. Hopefully you haven't said it, but some people have heard that, or even been disparaging about colleagues that we have and being quite tribal. And so that depersonalization, referring to a patient as, oh, the chest pain in room three. They're not a chest pain in room three. They're a patient with chest pain in room three. So depersonalization. And then the third component is a feeling that you're not accomplishing things. A reduced sense of personal accomplishment. So you can't get anything done. You feel like you're on the conveyor belt and things keep adding to your list, but you're never taking anything off your list. And it just keeps going and going and going. And it becomes very overwhelming. So those are the three components of the Maslow burnout inventory. And I have a picture that sort of summarizes it. And it's this one here. And it's a famous picture from 2015 of an unknown emergency physician. And the backstory behind this picture is that a teenager just died in their department. Couldn't save him. And the physician walked out, walked over to the wall, crouched down, and this picture was captured. And I really like this picture. Look at it closely. Look how grainy it is. Look how blurry it is. It made me think, what was that physician thinking? Were they thinking, do I make a difference? Could I have done something different? Could I have saved them? Can I even make a difference in this system? Who has not been that doc at that wall, crying over a case? I have, more than once. But I've also been that physician that's had to get up, wipe away the tears, and walk right back into the department. That can lead to burnout, not recognizing our emotions. So there was a survey done a few years ago, and it showed that US physicians reported at least one component of burnout 50% of the time. More than half of US physicians were expressing some form of burnout. Isn't that a terribly high number? Isn't that a shocking number? Any idea what it is in emergency medicine? Do you think it's higher or lower? Okay, because I can't hear you up here. Higher, yes, it's much higher. 70%. 70%. So you're sitting there in the audience. Look to the right. No, seriously, look to the right. Look to your left. Which one are you? Because more than two-thirds are expressing signs of burnout. Chances are you might be the one. Right? Now, one of the things that leads to burnout, and has been cited in the literature as a cause of burnout, is the electronic medical record. Oh, a friendly audience. Now, notice how I didn't refer to it as the electronic health record. I find that there's nothing healthy about putting a computer screen between me and the therapeutic alliance I'm trying to have with the patient in front of you. And research shows that electronic medical records, and specifically computer physician order entry systems, those physicians working with those were less satisfied with the amount of time they were spending with patients, the time they had to spend on clerical tasks, and had a higher risk for professional burnout. EMRs, in my opinion, have made us into very, very expensive data entry clerks and have been sucking the joy out of the practice of medicine recently. So, what can burnout have as a negative consequence? Well, it can have a negative consequence on you, the clinician. It can make you have problems. And I could quote some scary numbers on depression, suicidal ideations, suicide attempts, drug use, alcohol use, and completed suicides. But I think that as long as the number of suicides in the healthcare profession is more than a round number like zero, it's too hot. It can also have negative clinical consequences on the patients we care for. So they've shown that if you are suffering from burnout, that you have increased perceived medical errors, also increased actual medical errors, and associated with decreased quality of care. If we're not healthy, how can our patients get the best care possible? And they deserve the best care based on the best evidence. We'll see how my cultural references and jokes go here, and I'll blame Ian if it doesn't go over well. So are millennials, are they just whingers? Is that right? Whingers? Wingers? Whingers? Wingers? Swingers? No, I don't know. Maybe that would be even less burnout, I don't know. But willing to do it. No, I'm not willing to do a trial. So we would call them whiners. Millennials are just whiners. They're just a bunch of complainers. You know, they don't realize how hard medicine is, and they all want a participation trophy. Can't say anything negative, it might be a microaggression. Anyways, Ian and I were talking about this on the way from the airport to here, and so I included this in the talk. And, you know, I really think that this is not the case. I think burnout has always been there, and that we just haven't recognized it. And now that we have cultural diversity, which is a good thing, now that we have the feminization of medicine, which is a good thing, which I would refer to as a basket term, is the humanization of medicine. And I am so thankful for my culturally diverse colleagues and my female colleagues for helping us realize that. Because it no longer should be a bunch of white men sitting around saying, suck it up, buttercup. It reminded me of this comedy sketch from Monty Python. And I will talk about how I relate to medical students and residents shortly, but this Monty Python reference, hopefully you get it. They were four men sitting around talking about kids and how easy kids have it these days. And I put down, it's not like it was in my day. We did 28-hour ER shifts. We took no holidays, saw 10 patients an hour, and had to physically examine a patient who had trauma, not pan scan them. You tell that to a registrar today and they just won't believe you. I'm here to say, burnout is real. Physician wellness needs to be a priority. And I'll emphasize that again. Burnout is real. It's a reality of our practice. And physician wellness is a priority. And I'm so pleased to see ASIM taking a leadership role in recognizing the serious nature of this. But let's talk about solutions. How about solutions? Well, a systematic review and meta-analysis, Ian did say I was a nerd, systematic review and meta-analysis of 17 randomized trials and 37 cohort studies involving 3,600 patients showed that there was a number of different interventions that could be done. Some of them were systemic, and some of them were individually based. And I'm gonna focus in on one type, and that is mindfulness. Ooh, I'm bringing in the woo. Right? All right, mindfulness. It has been shown to have a positive impact on mitigating burnout. What is mindfulness? It's paying attention to the now, the present, both your internal and external environment. Taking a moment to just breathe. And it was started about 2,500 years ago by Buddha. And then, in the 1960s, it was brought to the West, mainly by the Beatles, actually. And so for the millennials out there, there were these four lads from the reason that's funny is because I had my son a few years ago come to me, Ethan, and say, hey, Dad, have you ever heard of this really cool band? I'm like, who are they? You know, and I'm thinking he's going to be talking about Maroon 5 or something. He goes, they were called the Beatles. Yes, I've heard of the Beatles, Ethan. So, yeah, and then it was actually an MIT professor named Jon Kabat-Zinn who started the mindful-based stress reduction program in the U.S. And then there's been this second wave that seems to have come through in the 2000s, and you can give all these apps on mindfulness that say, hello, my name's Andy, I'm here from Headspace. I'm not promoting any specific one. Anyways, for mindfulness, there's actually specific research done in Australia about this. Wow, Ireland and all published this last year, and I did a structured critical review on it with a legend of emergency medicine, Diane Brunbaumer. And we looked at this paper, and this paper took 44 interns who were doing their emergency medicine rotation, so a very specific population what we're interested in. And they offered a 10-week intervention involving mindfulness. And they were randomized to that. And then the control group got 1 hour extra. Not a day, a week. So that was their control group. And what they found was on the Copenhagen Burnout Inventory and a perceived stress scale, the people in the intervention group with mindfulness reported less stress and less burnout. So this is weak evidence. I'm not saying this is definitive research, I wouldn't do that, but this is weak evidence that mindfulness can impact meaningfully on burnout and stress. Now, we don't know if that translates into long-term, better stress reduction, and we also don't know if it translates to better patient outcomes, because that's really, really important. Now, I'm part of a mindfulness study right now, and it's with Diane Brunbaumer and a psychologist from my university, looking at mindfulness in women in emergency medicine. We've really got a lot accomplished. We've got lots of people interested, participants. We've got ethics approval. What do you think we're missing? Yeah, we can't get the funding. And I really hope that we can get the funding to focus in on this important thing, to find out if it really does work. Now, there's five other things I just wanted to say about mindfulness, or sorry, about burnout. And this comes from one of my mentors, Dr. Bucata. And Dr. Bucata wrote an essay about burnout, specifically for young people starting out in our specialty. So this is evidence-based medicine as opposed to evidence-based medicine. But there was five things contained in that that I thought were really good. And one was to pace yourself. This is a marathon, it's not a sprint. And younger physicians are particularly prone to trying to run really, really fast at the beginning and taking on excessive commitments, picking up extra shifts, doing some crazy turnovers. You need to set boundaries and learn to say no, to pace yourself. It's a marathon. Also, don't overspend. Don't overspend. Do you really need that toy? Try to live a year behind your income. This can be very helpful because you can quickly get into a lot of debt and you are no longer working for yourself. You're working for someone else trying to service your debt. Become an expert at something. That's really important too. If you're an expert at something, if you have a niche, if you have some kind of thing that you're super good at, great. That can help mitigate burnout. That could be point of care ultrasound. That could be SIMS. That could be medical legal. Anything. Find your niche. Find your passion within the profession. It is so big, you can find something. Find a safe confidant though as well. Someone that you can share your feelings with, that you can talk about your vulnerability, and how human you are, and the mistakes you have made, because you will make mistakes, but have that person that you can lean on. And then of course have something non-medical, right? Something outside of medicine is so important. Being a physician should be what you do, which should not be defining who you are. But I want to be clear about something. If 70% of ED physicians are expressing some form of burnout, they're not the problem. The system is the problem. And we can't just focus on the person. And sometimes I get really upset, thinking, oh, we need to do resilient training, we need to do mindfulness, we need to train them to toughen up, to make them stronger. And it makes them the problem, as if they're not good enough to handle it. But if 70% is your number, I would suggest that the system is the problem, not the individual, and we should stop blaming the individual. Something is wrong with the system. It's not wrong with you. It doesn't mean we shouldn't support the individual and be there and provide them with the tools, but we need to change the fundamental way we work so we don't chew people up and spit them out. And the system is made of individuals, so we need to be kind to each other. We need to avoid tribalism and offer each other a helping hand. And this is a shout out to a friend of mine, Dr. Brian Goldman, an ER physician from Canada. And he wrote a book recently called The Power of Kindness. It's an excellent book about how we should be kind to everyone, no matter who they are, whether they're patients, staff, friends, colleagues, especially the people at the back of the room in the blue shirts, the students. Yeah, that's you guys, right? We need to be kind to everyone. And if somebody is not acting kind, that's a red flag. Maybe they're not okay. Maybe something's going on in their life. Maybe they need help. Nobody went to their medical school interview and said, you know what? I want to be a jerk. That's what I want to be. Am I in? No, you went and said, I want to help people, right? I want to help people. Not that you want to be a jerk. So here's a little bit of story for the blue shirts back there about me being kind. All right, this is kind with students. Students get unfortunately placed with me for 1 month in the community, and they have to face all the bat doc jokes and things like that. I try to relate to them, though. I try to talk to them more than just about the science, but have some kind of relationship with the students as they're coming through so we can connect. And in the early stages of my career, because I graduated 21 years ago, it was easy. We talked about the same cultural things, the same jokes, the same music, the same movies. Yeah, they don't get it anymore. Because I'm stuck in the 80s, and I'll make some reference after a code and go, oh, they were only mostly dead. You know, and it used to be, ha ha, you're so funny, Dr. Miller. Yeah. And now it becomes, huh? And then I look at them and I'm going, you have never seen The Princess Bride? And they go, no. And I go, inconceivable. So after the first shift with me, I identify their educational needs from the 1980s based on the jokes they didn't get, and I give them a USB key with 5 movies that I consider core content, and I flip the classroom and I expect them to watch them before the end of the month. That's how I try to be kind to students and invite them into my world, and they tell me about Harry Potter and some of the new movies that I don't understand. But remember how I said that you had to be kind and that everybody has a story and you don't know what they've gone through or what they're actually currently going through right now, maybe even on the stage. So I'm going to give you a little bit of my backstory. And it's a story about failure, and it's a story about being on the edge of burnout. It's a little bit of vulnerability in front of a whole bunch of strangers and some friends. But this stuff can lead to wonderful experiences. On the left is what most people think about success, and on the right is reality. So, first of all, I didn't get into medical school, and I hope some out there also didn't get in on their first try. I was not in the gifted program, and it took me more than one attempt. But I used that opportunity. And I'm sure at the time I was feeling quite burnt out and the world was over and I'm not going to be a doctor and all this stuff, that I went and did a master's. And that fostered my love of research, of critical appraisal, of teaching. And I'm like, oh, looking back, that was pretty good. I didn't get into medical school. Life was still good. And then I did get into medical school and I was on my way. But life throws you curveballs. I wanted to be an orthopedic surgeon. Like everyone else. Doesn't everybody want to be an orthopedic surgeon? I mean, power tools. Who doesn't want to be an orthopedic surgeon? I wanted to be an orthopedic surgeon passionately. And I got into orthopedic surgery. I got into my residency program. But I experienced a little difficulty. You know, the ABCs. I had trouble with the A's because I became anaphylactic to latex. And this was in the early mid-90s. And so I would stop breathing during total hips and total knees. You may not think that that would be a problem, but it was. And so I switched to the non-latex gloves and all that stuff. And still, with the powder in the air, I was very sensitive and I was very anaphylactic and had to switch programs. On the edge of burnout, what do? Switched into family practice and got a general license. A general license, and went to be a country doctor, a rural physician. And what a benefit that was for me now as a clinician, as an emergency department doctor. And I worked for almost 5 years exclusively as a country doctor, but I also did emergency medicine in the local rural facility as part of my care. But I found that I really loved the emergency medicine the most, and I went back and I got my emergency medicine certification. Life was good. Life was very good. I was this ER doctor. I started this podcast, this knowledge translation program that's reaching 37,000 subscribers now. I get invited by Ian Rogers to come to the edge of the world and be a keynote speaker at Perth. I mean, I've reached the pinnacle, right? Everything must be great. Life is good. No, it throws you another curveball. This is my father, Dr. Ken Milne Sr. He's watching online right now. Hey, Dad. He's critically ill, and he got critically ill shortly before I came here. And while I was preparing this talk on burnout, and I'm like, really? How meta. I am going through burnout, trying to struggle with all my emotions about my dad, my hero, my mentor, and he's going through terrible things right now. But it's also been wonderful, absolutely wonderful. I've got to be in the resuscitation room, holding his hand until they yelled, clear, and I had to let go. Seeing that from the other side of the gurney or the trolley has been very, very eye-opening to me, and it's making me a better person and a better physician. But it's also placing me on the edge of burnout, coming here. But he insisted, you go, Ken. I am so proud of you. So I came. But I'm not a superhero, even though I dress up as one, as Bat Doc. And over the last 2 months, it's been very, very difficult, and I've worked to the point of exhaustion, physical exhaustion, emotional exhaustion. There's been a lot to process. I've broken down a few times, more than once, and cried. And you know what? That's okay. One specific time I remember, I was coming out of the hospital. Maybe you've had a similar experience when you've been emotionally upset. It's pouring rain and dark, so I wanted to set the mood here, right? And I've got my car keys in my hand, and I'm walking around going, where'd I park? I'd been to the hospital so many times, I couldn't remember which time I was there and where I parked my vehicle. And so here I was doing this. Waiting for the lights to come on. And for me to find out where the heck I had parked. And you know where I parked? Right at the front. I'd walked past my car already. So I was on the edge of burnout. But I have a life partner. Her name's Barb. And yes, it is Ken and Barbie. Who else would I have married, right? It's like our destiny. That was Back to the Future, by the way, people. So she's here right now. Hi, Barb. I can't see exactly where you are, but I know you're here supporting me. And she was there to support me through this experience and through the difficulty and through the challenges. And I have three amazing children. And so what I want you to do is take a moment. This will give me time to regroup. Thank you. Take a moment. Close your eyes. Please, close your eyes. Close them tightly. If your world, all of a sudden, came abruptly apart, who would you first think of and call? Do you have that person in your mind? Do you know who that is? That confidant you would lean on? That you would reach out in a time of crisis? I hope you have that person in your life. Don't open your eyes up yet, but promise yourself, after this lecture, promise yourself, you're going to text them and say how much you care about them. Open your eyes. I also had a lot of great friends, and those great friends I reached out to, and you know what I said to them? When they asked, hey Ken, how you doing? Are you okay? What do you think I said? I said, no, I'm not okay, but I will be, eventually, but I'm not okay now. I let colleagues know that I was struggling, and they stepped up and gave me help. Picked up shifts, pitched in for me. And I turned to the FOMED world. I remember putting this tweet out saying, I need a hug. It was just a really bad day. And I got so much response from the FOMED world. It was incredible. We need to be there for each other. We're all in this together. None of us are superheroes. We'll all experience burnout. But it's okay. It's normal. You can reach out to those people. And some of those people are here today in the audience. And I'm looking forward to seeing them after and sharing some maple syrup. So, success can be a series of false starts. I'm not going to call them failures, because I learned and I experienced and I grew, and it's good and it's wonderful and it's worth living. But life can throw you a number of curveballs at times. We've all been at the edge of burnout. Even a keynote speaker, even Bat Talk. But remember that it's okay not to be okay. I'm giving you permission. Be vulnerable. It's not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of strength. Take care of yourself. Do not be afraid to ask for help. And of course, don't panic. This too shall pass. And remember, the most important thing to be in life is yourself. Unless you can be Batman. So we have a wonderful job with crazy, amazing life-solving skills. We work fast, and we have lots and lots of cool tools to do it. And we can have a long and successful, fantastic career. And being an emergency medicine physician, we also have the opportunity to help every single patient we see. We can have a number needed to treat of one. Every single person can benefit from our experience and our interaction with them. It's an opportunity, a chance to make the world a better place. However, we should not be consumed by the practice of emergency medicine. We need to stay healthy ourselves. And if you're feeling overwhelmed, if you're on the edge of burnout, there are resources. And I've listed that resource, and you can search Member Wellness, because the college is taking an active interest in you. The college is you. You are the college. And if you are not healthy, and if you are not supported, and if you are not well, the college is not well. And so they are there to make sure that you can be successful. So thank you very much for inviting a Canadian to come to Perth, to the edge of the world, and talk about burnout and a little bit about my experience about being on the edge of burnout. Thank you very much.
Just maple syrup. Maple syrup is an ingredient.
Yes.
Look, thanks so much, Ken, for sharing your knowledge, understanding, and I suppose especially for sharing so much of yourself. That's not part of the job requirement for a keynote speaker. So we've got a few minutes for questions. I know that this whole issue is a really big one for the emergency medicine community, so I'd like to throw it out to the audience first, which means throwing the ball at the person who wants to ask the question. So have we got something out there?
Yeah, and while you're throwing the little cube around, the most common question I get are, what are the 5 movies, Ken? What should I be watching? It's easy. It's Ferris Bueller's Day Off. It's Top Gun. It's of course, Princess Bride. I mean, it's hard to limit it to 5. The canon from the 80s is so large.
Let's see where the bouncy ball's gone.
There's a gentleman up in the back, I believe, with the hand in the air, waving it like he just don't care.
And as he's getting ready, Ken, I'm going to ask the first question. I do a thing called clinical debrief tutoring with our final year medical students, where over the year we discuss real world problems that have been problems for them, ethical, moral, workplace, that sort of stuff. And one of the realizations they came to at the end of the final year of this series of tutorials was that they're actually a group who've been selected for the very qualities that make them vulnerable to burnout. And I just wonder if you've got some opinions about whether we're actually selecting the right people to become doctors or not.
Yeah, you wonder if we're actually self-selecting in a self-fulfilling prophecy of having people that are very prone to experience burnout, because everybody has a cup, right? And every cup is a certain size. And if your cup floweth over, it floweth over. But we tend to pick these people with these amazing backgrounds and these stories of they always won, they always succeeded, as opposed to, and that puts you at real, real danger of burnout because of that. So there's a question back there.
We've got the microphone up there.
Hello. Ken, thank you very, very much. For some of us, this has been a presentation a long time coming. Thank you for the courage. They say the road to burnout is paved with good intentions. The question I have from your Canadian experience relates around barriers to people seeking care, and when does burnout become a notifiable condition? Now, you know, clearly a bit of a loaded question, open for interpretation. It just strikes me that 70% we cannot ignore, and the Australian context hasn't made it particularly easy, and that's in print, you know, in ways that we understand. So please.
Well, certainly the 70% number is shocking and not shocking, but it was that they had at least one item or one component of burnout. It wasn't that they were completely burnt out, but they were expressing at least one component of burnout. The next question in there was about the what do we do, right? And when do we cross the line? And what about seeking care? So first of all, I think people don't seek care because of shame and because they're embarrassed and they think that they'll be perceived as weak. I hope no one here in this room thinks I'm weak now because of what I did. It took courage. But when it crosses over to patient care, I think that's the line that we can at least draw. It's hard sometimes to find that line because, as I know, the evidence for doing things and not doing things is not very strong. And this is a room of very intelligent people that can rationalize probably just about everything. So as a chief of staff, as someone who runs a hospital and oversees the medical staff, I have had to deal with this in the past. And when it crosses that, it's interfering with patient care and causing bad patient care, because it starts with patient care and it ends with patient care. We need to make sure that patients get great care. But hopefully, there's a message of hope in here that we can get to a state, a culture, a society that doesn't allow that to happen. Because you know that'll be the last thing you let go, right? Your professional commitment, your ability to take care of a patient, that'll be the last thing that goes. There'll be so many things before then, so many opportunities to intervene and be supportive. And I had so many people that are sitting here who actually sent me direct messages after I sent out that request for a hug and just said, "Hey Ken, I saw your tweet, are you okay?" They cared. So I think we need to have that cultural change, but it'll take time. It will take time.
I'm actually going to bring things to a close there, because I think that's sort of like the take-home message, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, let's thank Ken again.
Well, that was the talk given in Perth, Australia at ASIM 2018 on burnout. My dad and I spoke briefly after the presentation, and I told him how well it was received. It was the last time I spoke with my father. His voice was weak, but his spirit was strong. He told me how proud and happy he was that the message was positively received by the audience. The first president of ASIM, Dr. Thomas Hamilton, found me after the keynote address and wanted to say how much he enjoyed the talk and send a message to my dad in the hospital. I will put the video in the blog. The presentation was covered by the media, and so you can see a story about it on Crokey. My dad got worse through the night. My older sister, Kelly, read out loud to him the West Australian newspaper article about Bat Doc being in Perth, Australia. Dr. Ken Milne Sr. peacefully died on November 20th, 2018, shortly after she read the article to him, with my mom by his side. Thank you to the ASIM staff who showed hospitality and kindness to Barb and me. All the virtual hugs from FOMED friends were appreciated. A special thank you to Dr. Ian Rogers for inviting me to ASIM 18 and providing comfort. After my father passed, he sat with me, listened to a few personal stories, and raised a glass of scotch in my dad's honor. The trip to Australia has been full of memories and friendship I will never forget. I'm not okay, but I'll be okay. For this reason, I'm dedicating this ASIM 18 keynote address on burnout and the SGEM Extra episode to my mentor, my hero, my dad. The music from this episode comes from one of his favorite albums, Concert by the Sea by Earl Gardner Trio. My dad taught me how to be a good person, a caring physician, a loving husband, a dedicated father, and a decent human being. Now that you've listened to this talk on burnout, I want you to remember five things. Yes, five. It's okay not to be okay. Vulnerability is a sign of strength, not weakness. Take care of yourself. Don't be afraid or ashamed to ask for help. And don't panic. This too shall pass. There's one last thing I'd like you to do before this episode's over. And that is to close your eyes. That's right, close your eyes. Now think of that one person who you care about most in this world. When everything is crashing around you, who is that person you would turn to for help? Your confidant. Someone who you can always count on to be there for you. Hold that image in your mind's eye for a moment. Now open your eyes and call or text them so they know how much you love them. The SGEM will be back next week with a structured critical review of a recent publication, trying to cut that knowledge translation window down from over 10 years to less than 1 year, so patients get the best care based on the best evidence. And remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.